This is Focus with Paul W. Smith on 760 WJR, where Michigan comes to talk.
You know, no matter where you go, honestly, it's always great to get back home. And we were on the road for a week, and I want to take a moment to thank the team, because it's much harder for everybody on the road. We don't try to make it sound harder or complain, but it's just difficult to do a show that you're used to doing with everything around you where it should be, all the resources at your fingertips, et cetera, et cetera. So I salute our executive producer, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, and Rich Luzinski, who went through this week on the 23rd, annual Paul W. Smith Pure Michigan Tour. And we went through some great places. We were all over the place. Grand Hotel, what a wonderful way to start, on Mackinac Island, and then off to the Heritage Museum in Newaygo, thanks to our friends at ITC. And then the Midland Center for the Arts, Go Great Lakes Bay, sponsored us. Destination Ann Arbor welcomed us to the Botanical Mathai Gardens in Ann Arbor. And then Rocket, getting ready for the beautiful Rockets Classic, which is coming up. We were at the beautiful Detroit Golf Club. And so we had a good time, and extra help with Ray Templin on the scene. Ava Demanja, who is the account executive / producer on location. Pablo from Dean Trailways. We had a lot of help from a lot of people on the road, and we appreciate that. But as I said, it's good to be back home. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's like when you're on vacation, you had a great time, and then you lay down in your own bed. It's like,
you know, we need to come up with something. There are several things we needed to solve. We still haven't solved the changing the time, you know, daylight savings time, whatever it's going to be.
All right.
We haven't fixed that, and I really thought we would by now. And I thought it was fixed in Lansing. But, you know, it comes up, and then they argue, and then they get scared.
Yeah, it was
passed their tails.
Yeah, it was passed by one of the houses of Congress, and then we never heard about it again. Very odd.
It kind of sad. Here's the other thing we need to do. We need to establish, you know, if I still had President Trump's ear, he would do this because he's just that crazy. We should say that if you get a week's vacation from work, there is automatically 2 days added to that that don't count, so that when you get back from your vacation, you have those 2 days to get ready, to get settled, and to get back into work.
Right. It's sort of like the old saying, after my vacation, I need a vacation from
right.
the vacation.
The problem is, I can almost guarantee it, if in fact there was a law passed that said everybody gets a week's vacation, but then they get 2 days to get ready, people will stretch their vacation into those 2 extra days.
Right.
And then they'll get back and they'll be exhausted, and they got bills piled up at home they got to do, and then they got work piled up at work that they've got to do. So I'm not sure there's an easy fix for this.
Just self-discipline, I guess.
What is that? I've heard of that before.
I don't know
what that is.
When you punish yourself, I think. I don't know.
Discipline. Saturday, I missed our friend Anya Spiewak's birthday. Her birthday was Saturday. Today, our friend Maggie Theo Harris is having her birthday. Many listening might have gone to her husband, Dr. Evan Theo Harris, a noted doctor here in town. Have you noticed, happy birthday, Maggie, happy birthday, Anya. Have you noticed the amount of time in the news being spent on the hantavirus? That must mean that there's nothing else going on, because it's a little bit overwhelming for a disease that most of us don't have to worry about getting.
Right. It's nowhere near as contagious as even the common cold, let alone COVID. It's happening on the other side of the world. And I know that 17 people have been medically evacuated to some quarantine place in Nebraska, but yeah,
in that place, by the way, and this always happens now, when there's a medical emergency or something, these people have press conferences, and it turns into a commercial for their place.
Oh, really?
Have you ever noticed? I mean, we have several beds in a facility that takes care of any person who has any kind of a virus. It's like, okay, I'm glad that you're getting this moment in the sun.
We have the best respirators.
Yeah. You can't take that away from us. So anyway, God bless them for working and doing the job they do and all of that. And here's hoping the World Health Organization, or as I've called it in the past, Worthless Health Organization, let's hope that that they are right and that this isn't that big a deal. But it certainly keeps coming up.
I know.
In the news. Do we have to thank the late, great Ted Turner for that? They just have to fill every spot with news. And when they get a story like this, they
the
run with it.
The Hantavirus is a tribute to the late Ted Turner.
I don't know. I really don't. And I am now going to, it makes Kim upset, and I need to fix this. I am going to endeavor to not call people stupid anymore.
That's good. It's not the nicest thing in the world.
It isn't a nice thing.
But it's hard not to sometimes.
Well, the people I've said it about or to are stupid, but that rubs people the wrong way. So I need to come up with another word or way to
intelligently challenged. I don't know. We'll workshop it.
I've heard it from Kim for a long time. Now I've heard it from a couple of listeners, and I don't mean to ever upset my listeners on anything. And I am genuinely, generally a good person. I don't have fights with people. In my entire broadcasting days, I've had two fights in nearly 60 years of broadcasting, two fights with people I work with. And I've worked with from New York to Philly to Toledo to Monroe to Detroit. I've worked with a lot of people. And I generally get along. Would you guys admit I
sure,
get along?
Sure, absolutely.
Am I surly or hard for you guys to get along with? Now people say, well, what does he expect them to say? I expect them to tell the truth. But I'm generally not unreasonable.
Yes, Anthony doesn't call you Uncle Paul for nothing.
Yeah, well, there's no question I get frustrated. Mm-hmm. I get tired. That's my own fault for saying yes to too many things. But anyway, I'm going to try not to say stupid, and I would appreciate it if you would help me come up with a better word.
Okay.
For these numbskulls.
Well, okay, so intelligently challenged and numbskulls are on the board. Those are the two words to beat. Should we get a buzzer and make you, like, put a dollar in the stupid jar every time you say it?
Yeah, we should, and then we'll have a big party at the end of the year. and I hope we have $3 in it. But, it's like saying somebody is ignorant.
Yeah.
That's not saying they're stupid. That's not a put-down. It apparently means, and you can look it up, and Daniel probably already has, I think ignorant just means they just don't know.
Right.
Is that what that means?
Yeah,
you can't blame somebody for not knowing.
Yeah. I mean, ignorance can be fixed. I guess you can't fix stupid.
Ignorance
though.
Can be bliss, too. Have
That's
you heard
true.
That expression? And I'm not even sure why. But well, I'm going to tell you something. Our first guest today, I am so excited about because I love this man. I love the job he did as mayor of the city of Detroit. I will never forget it. Yes, I love the fact that he gave me the key to the city in his last week, and I will forever be grateful. But I liked this man before he became mayor. Worked with him on projects over the years. And now, of course, he is running as an independent for governor of the great state of Michigan. I sure wish him well, because I think he's worthy of any position he wants to try for. So I got my 2 cents worth in there. Anything else we need to mention? Thank you to everybody on the road and the Pure Michigan Tour. What else? We've got the
we got Pistons, but
Pistons
talk all that
tonight.
Later.
Yep. Very important game tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can watch it on a normal TV.
It will be on NBC. So
yeah, so that's good. And then we've got the Sandy Barua's big event coming up very soon, where we'll be back at Grand Hotel for the fabulous Chamber Conference.
2 weeks from Wednesday. It comes up quick.
And you're going to go now, as I understand it.
Yes. I only go to listen to the guy on the ferry on the way over.
Boy, I hope they keep me on that ferry forever. It's the only other advertising I have. That, and at the bottom of my column today, well, it is today, Monday, in the Detroit News. In fact, I write about our Pure Michigan. Just a quick map of where we went and what we did. Mike Duggan is coming up here in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Is that when the whole Is that when the whole 250 party is in June, Mike, instead of July? I thought it was all around July 4th.
I feel like it starts in June and goes into the fall.
All right. Well, I feel like it starts now and goes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's rampant. It's the we're pre-gaming right now for the 250.
I guess that's right. All right. Our next guest. I'll just tell you as I see it. As I've watched him, he's a turnaround guy. This is a guy who was the CEO of Detroit Medical Center. He saved the hospital system that was on the verge of bankruptcy. He transformed 7 years of deficit to 9 years of profit. Even during the Great Recession under his leadership, DMC was the only hospital system in the region that didn't lay anyone off. When he took office as mayor, Detroit was in trouble. Unemployment was 20%. Crime was sky high. Nearly half the city's streetlights didn't work, and the city was bankrupt. You fast forward to today. The unemployment rate in Detroit has plummeted. Crime is the lowest it's been in more than 50 years, and for the first time in more than 60 years, the city's population is actually growing. Mike Duggan is a proven turnaround guy. He is asking for your vote to turn around the great state of Michigan. What a pleasure and honor to welcome the former mayor of Detroit, independent gubernatorial candidate Mike Duggan, to Focus with Paul W. Smith. Mr. Mayor, it's been a while. Nice to catch up with you. You've been all over the state.
Well, good afternoon, Paul W. You know, I just left a vegetable farm in Ionia. I'm now to Grand Rapids, where I'm meeting with some business folks, and then the Poultry Farmers Association, and then back to Ann Arbor for a building trades group. So it's just another day in the great state of Michigan.
Are you keeping track of the miles you're putting on in this campaign?
Well, I've been very fortunate that my son Ed and my wife Sonia shared in the driving, so it hasn't all been me. Sonia says she's going to continue this until you bring her back on to guest host for
Well, I'm going to let her continue to help her husband until after the election. Then we'll be more than happy to bring her back. What's most important to you now? I know education has been extremely important, and there's no other way to put it. Education is broken in Michigan.
It is, and you've seen the numbers. 60% of third graders in Michigan do not read at grade level. It's a horrifying number, and it's been going that way for 20 years while the Republicans and Democrats keep fighting with each other. But I'm finding the same issue everywhere, Paul. This morning, so I'm at this vegetable garden in Ionia, a vegetable farm. They're struggling to make it. They aren't on the energy grid because Republicans and Democrats haven't solved that. They have no broadband because that hasn't been rolled out. And I'm talking to these farmers who say Lansing's completely forgotten about the second biggest industry in this state. What do you know as the mayor of Detroit about it? And I say, well, let me see. What do I know about representing people who felt ignored, forgotten, and left behind? And talk about what we did in Detroit. And it's amazing when we sit and talk with each other how much we have in common.
Well, it's true. Because everything that those vegetable farmers are dealing with, and all farmers, about feeling forgotten, we felt that way in the city of Detroit. You have, in terms of education, a Marshall Plan for early reading. You want to completely rebuild high school career and technical education programs, create an educator-driven school grading plan, leave it in place for 5 years. But here's really something that you'll be fought on from teachers' unions, sadly, and that is establish real consequences for failed school leadership. That is so important, but so difficult to come to.
Well, so far there's no sign of the teachers' union opposing it. In fact, they interviewed me over the weekend. I think everybody in the education side knows this, that in 1994 this state passed the 6-cent sales tax, and we were promised that extra 2 cents would go to K-12 education. And under Jennifer Granholm, they borrowed a couple of $100 million out of K-12 and moved it to something else and said she'd pay it back. Then Rick Snyder came in, and he increased the diversion about $600 million, and the Democrats attacked him, saying, how dare you take money out of schools for all these other earmarks? And today, under Democratic leadership, they take $1.3 billion out of our public school system that was promised to go there, and they're spending it on all these other earmarks. And I'm saying this is going to stop, that when you're 44th in America on third grade reading, you can't be diverting the money out of schools. And over 5 years, I'm going to restore it, and we are going to go back to teaching the kids phonics. We are going to have tutors for the kids when they start to fall behind. And none of that is Republican or Democrat, but it does take leadership that says, if you can't read in third grade, where's our future?
Another thing that isn't Republican or Democrat, and you've been very good about setting aside the us versus them politics. That's why you shocked everybody to say you weren't running as a Democrat. You were one of the strongest Democrats in Michigan history. And you said, I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to go independent. And I think the timing was brilliant. Sadly, the Democrats who were all for you in one day did a turnaround,
right,
which was
right.
Was so ridiculously transparent and showed where they are. But when we spend like $4.5 billion in our schools, you understand, Mayor Duggan, that the people of Michigan expect to see results. That's not asking for so much. That's $4.5 billion from us to go into the schools. It's not that we're not spending enough. And I know the Mike Duggan I know, put into this position, will hold schools accountable to make sure our kids are actually improving. That's not Republican. That's not Democrat. That's Michigander, Michiganian, and what we need and want for our kids. And I really believe that's what you're working toward.
Well, and my plan says the principals and superintendents are accountable for the performance, and we'll give them 3 years. We'll restore the money that has been diverted over that period of time, and we will have clear curriculums that won't change. But we expect the principals and superintendents to perform. And if they don't make it the first year, they can have a second year to improve. But after the third year of failure, we're going to replace the building or district leadership. And the great majority of superintendents are behind me on this. They're saying, if you give me clear standards and you restore the money, our children can learn, our teachers can teach. And so that's what I'm saying. We'll put the $1.3 billion back. It's been taken out, but we will demand accountability in exchange from the leadership of the districts and the buildings.
How difficult has it been, Mayor Mike Duggan, former mayor of Detroit, independent gubernatorial candidate? Apparently, you posted a video on social media about how much tougher it is to get on the ballot in the first place as an independent, rather than if much easier as a Republican or a Democrat. Tell me real quick about that.
Yeah, well, the state law says Democrats and Republicans need 15,000 signatures. Independents need 30,000. And 8 years ago, a federal judge said that's not constitutional, but the legislature never fixed it. So I just said, I'm not fooling around with this. I'm going to get the 30,000, which is twice as much as the others need. And as of today, we've got more than 25,000 petition signatures. 8,000 came in last week. People around the state have been phenomenal. And if you want to help us on this, we have until July 15th. Go to MikeDuggan.com. We'll send you a packet. Get 15, 20 signatures. But at the rate we're going at 8,000 a week, it looks like we're going to be well over any threshold we'll need in the next 4 or 5 weeks. And I just want to say thank you to the people of the state for supporting me.
Well, it's some people already, again, this time around, are having some of their signatures questioned, which is crazy that it comes down to these technicalities. But MikeDuggan.com, MikeDuggan.com, if you want to take out to get some signatures on his behalf, or if you want to learn more about what he would like to do as governor of the great state of Michigan, you can find that at MikeDuggan.com. And by the way, any contributions you make would be, I'm sure, very happily accepted, right?
No, that's for sure. We got our work cut out for us competing with the parties on fundraising, but people have been really generous and we're working really hard.
Mike Duggan, former great mayor of Detroit, independent gubernatorial candidate. Thank you, sir. We wish you the best of luck. Anyway, we can help you along the way, like we help everybody we can. Please don't hesitate.
Thanks for having me, Paul W.
Give our best to Dr. Sonia and to your son, Ed, as well. And I hope they enjoy all of the driving that they're going to have to do to help you continue to go across the great state of Michigan. Mike Duggan, running for the governor of Michigan. Just writing myself a note, I'm going to be appearing tonight at 8 o'clock on WJR into Mike's new show, Mike Parson's new weekly show every Monday at 8 p.m. Nightside with Mike Parsons. And now the shoe will be on the other foot? No, I don't know. I'm not hosting.
No.
He's hosting. I'm guesting? Is that right?
You're co-hosting, but, you know, I got to bring the big guns in because, you know, it's a new show, so I got to make a splash here.
All right, so am I doing this just this time, or am I doing this every Monday, the beginning of the show? What's the story on that?
So, yeah, I would like you to kick off every Monday with me as time allows. I know that you're a busy guy, so I'll have you on as often as you can make it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that'll be fun. 8 o'clock tonight should be extra special. Well, you've been doing the program for a while, so it's
already underway. Yeah, it'll be the third one, but yeah.
Very good. Jonathan Savage is a great Fox News correspondent and WJR contributor, and he joins us with a couple of stories, including President Trump rejecting the latest offer from Iran. Jonathan, he didn't take it very seriously, it seems.
No, he didn't even finish reading it, Paul. That's what he told journalists in the Oval Office in the last hour or so. On social media yesterday, President Trump rejected Iran's response to the U.S. proposal as totally unacceptable. Well, he's gone even further today, calling it unbelievably weak and saying that the ceasefire is on life support. He said Iran's response was a piece of garbage. I was going to come on here and say that diplomacy is not dead, but definitely needs some TLC.
You know, I don't know. This whole thing is so confusing to most of us, and it seems that this break, if anything, just has given the Iran forces an opportunity to try to fix all of their problems, of which there were many, to re-gird their loins, so to speak, and get ready for the coming onslaught that we expect will be coming from America and Israel.
Very possibly. There are even reports that Iran has about 70% of its missile stockpiles remaining. These are reports which have not been confirmed, but it is supposedly, according to Washington Post, from the CIA analysis. So there's that aspect of it, but then also Iran has proven time and again that it can leverage what's called asymmetric warfare, a method by which a smaller participant in a conflict can do serious damage to a larger one. And we've seen that in the Strait of Hormuz, where even the threat of targeting ships has done enormous damage to the global economy. And when they have targeted ships, sometimes they've done it simply by loading speedboats with explosives and sending them unmanned across the water to crash into the side of them. You've seen drones and missiles flying at U.S. military assets in the Gulf region and at the allies of the United States as well, such as the United Arab Emirates. So Iran is very publicly trying to project strength, trying to project defiance. And then if this response to the U.S. proposal is, as President Trump is saying it is, they are trying to project these things privately as well.
Well, you know, what we've learned very quickly, sadly, is we're looking at us using weaponry that cost millions, missiles that each cost millions of dollars, to down drones that cost a few hundred dollars, maybe a couple thousand dollars. That's just crazy. And I know we've tried to now create our own drones and spend less on the weaponry, but it's been a lesson, I hope, learned by our government that this is kind of ridiculous the way this has gone. Meanwhile, Benjamin Netanyahu is out there and saying that he doesn't think America should continue to give him as much money as we've been giving him. I mean, I felt like I was in an alternate universe when I was watching all this over the weekend. And then we have a Russian president and liar, Vladimir Putin, saying that he thinks the Russia-Ukraine war is coming to an end. Was I dreaming all of this, or was this true?
Well, let me just start with the Benjamin Netanyahu comment, which he made to CBS, saying that the United States provides $3.8 billion of military aid to Israel every single year as part of a 10-year agreement, saying that it's absolutely the right time to reset that relationship. And I wonder whether maybe he's seeing something coming down the line, because the tide has turned a little bit. And we saw how when President Trump came into power, he cut off the funding for Ukraine. So perhaps Benjamin Netanyahu thinks there's less appetite for giving other countries money and military support, even Israel in this case. So that's what I thought about that. Vladimir Putin, yeah, absolutely fascinating. Speaking after his country's Victory Day military parade, a massively scaled back parade compared to previous years.
Right.
Was talking to journalists, and he said... he was asked about military support for Ukraine, and he condemned that Western support for Ukraine. But then he said, "I think that the matter is coming to an end, but it is a serious matter." The indication being that he believes that diplomacy may bear fruit eventually. Now, Vladimir Putin has always said that, you know, his demands are the same as ever. He wants a buffer between himself and Europe. He wants to, in his words, demilitarize Ukraine, and there's no sign that Ukraine is anywhere close to agreeing anything with Russia. So Vladimir Putin's comments have led to some skepticism.
And the Kremlin has said, I don't know if he said it then, but you had the exact quote, "I think that the matter is coming to an end." Well done. But the Kremlin has said peace talks brokered by President Trump and his administration have been on pause. And when you think about it, we really haven't heard much about that lately, have we?
No, we haven't. There's been some talks going on behind the scenes with other intermediaries, I think, but we haven't seen President Trump's envoys go to Moscow recently, as they had done before. I believe some senior Ukrainians visited Florida, but in terms of like actually getting anything on paper, anything coming out in public, very little information.
Always a great job. Keep up the good work. Jonathan Savage, Fox News correspondent extraordinaire and WJR contributor. Thank you much, Jonathan.
Thanks, Paul. Have a great one.
You do the same. As we continue in focus on WJR, we generally have this guy's partner on much more than this guy. But I'm so happy to welcome Stephen Henderson. He's the founder of Bridge Detroit, host of American Black Journal on PBS, and co-author of the Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide. Should be must reading for everybody, but especially those in politics. Nolan Findlay and Stephen Henderson, along with Lynn Golodner. And what we're going to talk with, we'll talk with Stephen about anything he wants to talk about, but one of the things we're directing him toward is the redistricting battle that's heating up as more states are entering the fray. Just a couple weeks ago, Democrats felt increasingly emboldened about taking control of the House in November after seeming to fight the redistricting wars to a draw. But two court rulings, one by the Supreme Court and another by Virginia's top court, and an aggressive new push by red states to carve up congressional maps have delivered the Republican Party its biggest burst of momentum in many months. And I'm just going to ask you, Stephen, first of all, good afternoon. Welcome to the program. It's been a while.
Hey, Paul. Great to hear from you.
I just want to ask you if you could just give us your take on what redistricting is all about. Try to convince me and anyone else listening that it's not a way for either the Democrats or the Republicans to win votes without even caring about who the people want to vote for, it seems.
So, I mean, I think the first thing that comes to my mind when we talk about this, and I really want to make this point, there's a reason this isn't happening in Michigan. And it's because we as voters decided in 2018 to take this process away from politicians and give it to the people. And we saw that process play out in 2021 after the census. Now, was it a perfect process? I don't think anyone would say that. And there's some people who still, I think, are questioning, you know, how we can do it. But the fact that we have taken that step, I think, is an incredible lesson for the nation right now. I mean, these are very strange circumstances that are happening in places like Tennessee and Virginia. This idea of mid-decade redistricting, first of all, is somewhat novel. I mean, the idea that there was something wrong with the redistricting in 2020 that needs to be fixed. No one has really made, I think, the empirical case for that. And then, of course, there's the overt partisanship that's involved here, right? In a state with heavy Democratic voters, they're just trying to wipe out all the Republican districts, and vice versa. We're seeing Republican states do the same thing to Democrats. But, you know, this is about rule making and line drawing, and that should be a blind process, at least when it comes to politics and when it comes to race and gender and these other things. And I feel like we should be shouting from the hilltops here in Michigan saying, hey, look at us. we took a huge step to do this in a different way, and it's working. I mean, it's working at least to keep us out of the fray of all of this other nonsense that we see going on.
So then tell me, Stephen Henderson, why I'm seeing in the news so much that there are those who are suggesting that all of this, or much of it, has to do with taking away Black voters' rights that they've had to fight hard to get. Is that it? Do you see it that way?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at a state like Tennessee, where they have carved Memphis, which is the sort of base of Black votes in that state. It's not a state with a ton of Black voters, but they do exist in that part of the state. And they've carved it up so that the voters there can't elect kind of their own representative, you know, right? Choose for themselves who will be in Washington for them. There's no question that is an assault on the progress that was made after the Voting Rights Act in 1965. I mean, we have about 148 majority-minority districts, as they call them, nationwide right now. That progress has come through a lot of effort to reverse the discrimination that took place for the first, you know, nearly 200 years of life in this country. Why we would go back to something else is, I think, beyond me. You know, they often frame this as a question about Black voters and what they will do or what they can't do. I always want to frame it as much about white voters. So if you look at a place like Tennessee or a place like Virginia or a place like Michigan, it's very rare. It's even, just scarce to see a majority white congressional district elect an African American. Most of the African Americans who serve in the Congress come from districts where people mostly look like them. That's true of Latin voters as well, and some other demographics. So the question really is, when will white voters open the doors to electing non-whites to represent them in Congress? I mean, most Black people in this country are still represented by people who don't look like them, right? There's only 148 districts where they even have the chance, really, to do that. You know, when do we get past the fact that race seems to define all of these choices, not just for Black voters, but especially for white voters?
So where does this put the United States Supreme Court? In the hole that many people, at least on the Democrat side, the left side, whatever side you want to call it, that what they're saying about the Supreme Court is really bad right now. Do you hold them in the same low esteem?
Well, I don't love the rulings that they're issuing. Right. You know, I think they are eroding precedents that matter. my biggest problem is that they seem to say, well, race is no longer a problem, and so we don't need these mechanisms to make sure that it doesn't influence decisions. But then when you bring them evidence that says, well, no, actually race still does matter quite a bit, and these mechanisms are what's fixing it, they say, well, you can't prove that. And it's almost like this idea of a brutal post-racial agenda, I guess, that they have, which is to sort of take away from African Americans the tools that the few tools we have to push back against the history in this country. So, you know, that's really disappointing. And lots of these justices, of course, sat in front of the Senate during their confirmations and said they wouldn't erode precedents this way. I get that, you know, they never quite nail people down on that, but it's just not the way it's supposed to work. And it leaves people with very few options. I mean, what are Black voters supposed to do to make sure that they get representation? I'm not sure I know the answer to that.
We're out of time. Are you going to be up at Sandy Baru Oz Greater Detroit Regional Chamber Policy Conference?
Of course I will. And in fact, I want to plug this. We've got a Michigan Debate Commission together, a broad coalition of organizations, and we are going to hold a debate between the Senate Democratic primary candidates up there. We wanted to do governor as well. We couldn't get that one together.
All right.
But we are going to have a Senate debate up north. So
all right. We'll look forward to that. We'll cover it because we'll be up there. And then the final question is, what role did bourbon play in you and Nolan being good friends, Stephen?
If I had to put a percentage on it.
Hurry, I'm out of time.
35%, 40%.
Thank you. We continue on WJR. Hour number two on this Monday, May 11th. Nice to be with you in focus. And I should mention, as often as we can, and I think every day we will, Facebook and YouTube pages have live video of the show. And then Mike tells me it stays there. You can stream us live from anywhere in the country or world, and people are. You can come back if you can't be here noon to 2, like when we are here live right now. Come back and get the podcast on WJR.com, and you can listen to the whole show in a very short period of time. And don't forget to add the free WJR app to all those apps you don't use that you have on your phone or whatever device you have them on. Do that. And we're the happy sandwich between a daily dose of Dietz, Kevin Dietz, and All Talk. And then right after us, JR Afternoon with Ryan Armani. And very happy to be here with you back home after a very successful 23rd, maybe, annual Paul W. Smith, WJR Pure Michigan Tour. But, you know, it's always nice to be home. My friends Art and Mary invited me to go out and see Candace Miller on her birthday. It's her annual birthday celebration. Where is that? It's out, you know, it's out there somewhere. I thank God I have Lath, or Leo, many people call him. I call him Lath. He's going to be driving me out there somewhere. The reason is because I get work done that I can't get done when I'm driving. Here we go. The Palazzo Grande. You know that place well. The Palazzo Grande. How come I don't see the... I thought I had the entire address in here. Anyway, that's believe me, Lath knows how to get there. That's the beauty of using Metro cars. Let's see. We've got Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason running all the controls. We call her the queen of the switches. Rich Luzinski keeping an eye on a WJR traffic and weather first. Relentless positive radio is what we try to do. It's not always easy. My column is in today's Detroit News. It's just a summary of our Pure Michigan trip. But tonight at 8 o'clock, it'll be my pleasure to be appearing in the beginning of Mike's new weekly show called Nightside with Mike Parsons. So I'll be there at 8 o'clock for that. We've got Pistons. Of course, they fell to the Cavaliers 116-109 on Saturday, but they do remain up 2-1 in the Eastern Conference semifinal. And boy, they battled back like they have in the second half. They've done that. They were down 16 points at halftime, pulling within one with less than a minute left in the fourth. That James Harden wanted to prove that he isn't worthless. He answered, he's never been worthless. James Harden answered critics who said he wasn't a cuts player, performer, but he was. He did a great job for them. Of course, Arcade Cunningham finished with a triple-double, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. But he had a number of turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
Tobias Harris scored 21. Game 4 is tonight in Cleveland, tip time 8 p.m., and we're lucky because it's easily found, what, on NBC, right?
Yeah, so you'll be able to NBC it.
You've been waiting all morning and afternoon to be able to say that.
Since last hour, actually. It's one of those things that came to me after the moment had passed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as you've noticed, the moment never really has to pass.
Right.
And if you are having trouble passing moments, drink lots of water.
Right. Happens to a lot of guys.
Yeah. Democrats and Republicans in Washington are said to be uniting around an unlikely cause: making it easier for daycares to hand out fruit instead of potato chips.
All right, that's good.
Except why are Democrats and Republicans in Washington having to get involved in such an inane situation that goes without saying? It's better to hand out fruit. Yeah. Instead of potato chips.
Yeah, it seems like something that they could just, these places could just do themselves. Maybe it's a funding thing. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of.
I don't know either.
Because other than that, yeah, just pass out the fruit.
It's called, very appropriately, the banana bill. Yikes, I'm telling you. I don't know.
Who names these bills? I want that job.
I don't know. But I'm not going to call them stupid.
No. Oh, you know what?
Oh, did you come up with some other good words for
Danielle
me?
Came up with a suggestion that she wants to put up for consideration.
Yes, Danielle. Am I going to like this or not?
I'm calling this the BBB, and it is for Bring Bozo Back. So you can start calling them bozos if you want.
You know, that's
you
not a
bozo.
That's not a bad idea.
So far, I like bozos the best.
Yeah, I mean, BBB, not to be confused with the Better Business Bureau, which we love. But Bring Bozo Back.
Yeah.
What a bozo.
Right.
Now, people can't be offended by that like they are offended by me saying someone's stupid.
Right. I mean, bozo
what
sounds...
What a bozo.
Right. Bozo sounds harsh, but it's so comic.
Yeah, and everyone loves bozo.
Right.
So in the end, I'm really just saying something nice about him.
Yeah. It's a backhanded compliment. But I like bozos. So far, I think that's the leader here.
I'll try to use that. I'll try to remember it. Oh, I have such a great Sophie story, but I am not going to tell it now, but I will tell it. Maybe I'll tell it on your nighttime show.
Oh, you know what? I'll write that down.
Yeah, well, it has to do with her father, that would be me.
Right.
Yelling at a driver who almost got us killed.
Not late.
No, this is a long time ago. I used two words. One that I thought would get me in huge trouble if she told her mother that she heard me say this word, and one that she had been taught that we don't use. So I said, "You blanking idiot!" And then I went, "Oh, no, I can't believe I just did that." And she's sitting in the back seat, and she said, "Dad, we don't use those words." I went, "Oh, no, this is going to cost me." I know, Sophie, I'm sorry. He goes, "We don't say idiot."
Right. The other one.
Believe me, the blanking word was far worse than idiot.
Yeah. Well, idiot's a direct insult, while the F word's a qualifier. So maybe that's
how'd you
why.
Know it was the F word? I never said it was the F word.
Yeah. Well, I
but
assumed.
You were right.
I assumed.
You were right. Okay. Maria's going to come by and talk to us about this water fix in Auburn Hills that could take weeks.
Yeah. And I feel like there was some kind of water main break last year that had the road collapsed over in that area last year, too. So just a whole lot of trouble with the infrastructure there in northern Oakland County.
L. Brooks Patterson told us many years ago that the infrastructure was going to take billions. That's when billions were a lot.
Right.
Billions to fix, and he said it was just going to happen because it was underground. We don't think about it, and we don't fix it.
Right, until there's an issue.
Pay the piper. Yeah. Audio captures moment Frontier plane fatally struck pedestrian. Well, they had video, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a big flash, and I couldn't understand that. Then I found out this guy who should not have been walking onto the runway, had to. It wasn't easy to walk on the runway. You had to go over fences and barbed wire and everything. He got sucked into the engine.
And you got to feel for the pilot, too, because there's nothing that pilot could have done in that moment to avoid
this
guy.
No, he was on his way to taking off, as I recall.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. Just terrible. Now, this one is a head-scratcher. So there's a TikTok creator. That's anybody that's on TikTok that's making money off it. Is that what they call them?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, there's a
some
TikTok
are better than others.
Creator with a crowdfunding campaign to buy Spirit Airlines. Now, when you go involved, when you're involved in a crowdfunding campaign and you give money, does that mean you get a piece of the action? I mean, would these people who are putting money in actually get a piece of Spirit Airlines if this money leads to them buying Spirit Airlines?
I guess that depends on the integrity of the creator. You must really trust this guy to donate that much money.
Well, you know how much money has been donated? $335 million.
Right, and it was $500 million that they needed from the government to bail out. So they're getting close to that, but I feel like there's a lot more involved in
bringing back
a dead airline than just the money.
You take that $335 million or $500 million, you bring back Spirit Airlines, and then you have the day-to-day expenses of running an airline. That ain't cheap, my friends. That's why Spirit, who was in the business for several years, couldn't do it.
Right. And I'm sure there's some startup fees that probably go over $500 million in legal fees and all that stuff. So
it's all a mess.
Yeah.
But I was shocked to see that anybody would send in money. Then I saw $335 million. That's not just anybody. That's a lot of anybody's sending money into a crowdfunding campaign to buy Spirit Airlines.
Well, and then do you get your money back if they don't reach the goal?
Oh, you do?
No, my question is, do you? I would think I don't know.
I don't know how any of that works because I can't imagine there's any crowdfunding campaign I would do other than the one to give me a nice retirement.
Right.
A nice retirement.
Let's start our own for research purposes.
Come on, I've raised money for all kinds of people over the years.
It'll be called the Pay Paul Back campaign.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there are a lot of people who'd like to pay me back. Anyway. All right, we're underway. And coming up, speaking of Marie and the folks that could be without water for weeks, she's going to fill us in on all the details here in Focus on WJR. Thank you, Lloyd. What a great JR Mornings you have with Lloyd Jackson, Chris Renwick, Jamie Edmonds, and friends. Lots to listen to first thing in the morning. Well, there's a water main break in the early hours of Mother's Day, Sunday, May 10th, and it could leave some Oakland County residents and businesses without water, believe it or not, for up to 2 weeks. I find it hard to believe, but we're going to get the story right now from Marie Osborne. Good afternoon, Marie.
Hello, Paul. So this massive water main break has led to Governor Gretchen Whitmer declaring a state of emergency, had to activate the State Emergency Operations Center. This is how serious this is. Residents in Auburn Hills, Pontiac, Rochester Hills, Orion Township, Lake Orion, Oakland Township, they're all being asked to use water only for absolutely essential needs. The Great Lake Water Authority says it's going to take at least 2 weeks to get everything back to normal, might take longer. There are schools that are closed also in the county as well in several communities. Water trucks are available for communities impacted by the water main break. The fix, again, could take several weeks. Suzanne Coffey is the CEO of the Great Lakes Water Authority. She said crews are working on rerouting the water from the main break to the pumping out water at that break site. The pipe that failed was installed in 1975. It was labeled a 100-year useful life pipe. That's according to Coffey. The break is unexpected. Officials say they're not sure what caused it. We were able to talk to Sherry Carver of Lake Orion. Now, she says she's really lucky. She's on well and septic, so her water has not been impacted, but she has a son in Auburn Hills. a son, a daughter-in-law, two small children. She says they don't have water, and they've tried to be of help.
The cooking and cleaning, baths, obviously. Also, drinking water is a big deal. And I know laundry, when you have little ones in the family of four, it's a constant.
So on Mother's Day, she opened her doors, as moms always do, for them to come in and get showers and get some laundry done and have something to eat. She says they're offering help also to their neighbors and friends.
We're all just pitching in. I think we're a community that does that. You know, people are stepping up and saying, how can we help? So I'm just trying to be here for as long as it takes. It sounds like it's going to be a two-week haul for people. I just, you know, I have offered for them to come over, showers, laundry, whatever they need, cooking, whatever they need to do.
Yeah. So she very proudly said that, yes, indeed, they are a helping community out there, and that's what they're going to continue to do. But right now, they're trying to get this fixed on, but it's going to take some time.
This is just bizarre. I mean, I was going to suggest we were going back to the warning a long time ago on this program, well, my morning show, that L. Brooks Patterson said, Paul, the big one's going to be the what's underground, and it's going to be with a B to fix. And that's back when $1 billion was a lot. Now it's a dime a dozen, unfortunately. But he warned us that the infrastructure was out there, and because it was out of sight, out of mind, it was going to be situations like this. But you have just scared me to death. This is only from 1975.
I know. I was shocked to hear that, too.
That's just... I hope, you know, when it was said to be a 100-year fix, I hope that we have a warranty or a guarantee that the people who put that in have to stand behind it. I don't know how that works.
And I don't know either. And I don't know if the GLEWA, Great Lakes Water Authority, I don't know if they answered that question or not, or have answered it. I can well imagine that there's going to be some investigation into that. Because when you have this many people that don't have water and don't have, I mean, schools have had to close. The woman that we just talked to here in Lake Orion, Sherry Carver, was saying, you know, yesterday was Mother's Day, big restaurant day. Can you imagine all those restaurants that lost their business yesterday?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
So that's, I just wonder if there isn't going to be some look by, you know, legal.
Well, there'll be lawsuits. Will be lawsuits. That's inevitable. The break occurred on a 42-inch transmission main in River Woods Park in Auburn Hills. It was actually found to be leaking on Wednesday, May 6th. The GLWA was attempting to reroute water to avoid a total water loss, but the main broke before that effort could be finished. So... again, let's remind people, what should residents affected during this water main break do? What should, besides boil water advisories, if they're not getting water, what else?
Well, they should, yeah, absolutely boil water. But also remember, you can't brush your teeth with it. You can't do your dishes with it. This is all contaminated water, so you have to be very, very careful. Again, the county says that water trucks are available for communities impacted by the water main break. Just contact your local city of township offices, whatever. I'm sure they'll have information on that. Some communities are offering bottled water as well. In terms of the schools, I think that's going to be a day-by-day situation. Lake Orion Community Schools are closed through tomorrow, where Avondale schools are just closed today. So parents, just watch your text messaging. They're going to let you know if your schools are open or closed for tomorrow or in the days to come. And Oakland Community College, by the way, canceling their in-person classes today. They're going to virtual and hybrid classes. They're going to continue that. Again, may change in the coming days as well.
Great Lakes Water Authority is sending out those water trucks, and they will provide 1-gallon containers of water to each resident. They don't mean 1 gallon. They mean containers. They mean several. I mean, 1-gallon container. You'd be amazed at how much water we go through when we take it for granted. So they're also going to be available in Orion Township, at the Wildwood Amphitheater on Joslyn Court, in Auburn Hills at the Auburn Hills Department of Public Works on Brown Road, in the village of Lake Orion at Atwater Park on Atwater Street. I don't know what else to tell them. I just feel their pain. This is a sad, terrible situation, and really bad to hear that it's not one of those 100, 150-year-old pipes. It's from 1975.
Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a lot of looking into what happened here and why it happened.
Yep, yep. How was Mother's Day?
Oh, it was wonderful. We were able to go out to eat with the young ones. And, when I say young ones, I mean adults. And it was lovely. It was lovely.
Young ones. They're always going to be. They're always going to be your young ones.
Yeah, they sure are.
It's just the way
it was
goes.
Lovely. Went out for a great dinner, and it was. I don't know if you've ever been to El Barzon in Southwest Detroit.
No.
Fabulous restaurant.
Really?
Fabulous.
What's it called?
El Barzon.
Okay, I'll have to look for it now. So, does John ever cook at home? Does he ever say, sweetheart, I'm going to make you a great meal?
Oh no, he's a very good cook. He's a very good cook.
Oh, good, good.
His mother was a great cook, so he learned how to cook. He's a very good cook.
All right, just checking. God bless John, and God bless you, Marie Osborne, Director of Community Affairs and News here at WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes. Thank you much. Have a great rest
Thank
of
you.
The day. Glad Mother's Day went well. It's 1:28 at WJR. I think this will be interesting. I'm hoping it will be. And that is, talking about the Pentagon releasing a large number of files of what we used to call UFOs, unidentified flying objects, now called UAPs, unidentified anomalous phenomena. And the first question I'm going to ask our expert, the astronomer and manager of the Delta College Planetarium, Mike Murray, why in the world did they change it from UFOs, Mike?
Well, the UFOs always had this sci-fi connotation that they must be alien beings from another planet. So part of it was to get away from the stigma, but most of it was because there's more anomalous or unusual phenomenon than just flying. You know, there could be something on the ground, there could be something underwater. So they wanted to be more inclusive of the strange phenomena that cannot be immediately identified. And that's the thing to emphasize. It doesn't mean that they're some kind of aliens or creatures. It just means we don't have enough information to identify what it is.
Why do you think this has been kept secret for so long?
I think you always have this element of, well, it needs to be analyzed, and they don't want to let information out too early, because then that just opens the door to all kinds of speculation and conspiracy theories and those types of things. And yes, I would freely admit that I think that the military, depending on what the objects are, because some of them could very well be secret military aircraft. So I can understand why some of those would be kept under wraps for a while.
You mean our military or somebody else's
Any
military spying on us?
It could be either. In fact, I wouldn't doubt it if there's both.
Interesting. Now, when they show these things, when I can figure out what they're showing, when I've seen them on television, some of these things are jigging and jagging and making moves that we don't believe people could withstand the G-forces of the quick moves. And so I guess either we're not sure what we're seeing, or we're thinking that if there is anybody in there, that they aren't built like us, I guess.
Yeah, I would, you know, in cases like that, I think they'd be prime candidates for unmanned. And they could be drones, they could be secret aircraft, because they can move in all kinds of ways that would be way too dangerous for human occupation. So there's going to be a lot of, and sometimes there's a lot of aerial phenomenon that is connected to atmospheric effects. Now, I'm not writing away all of them. There's still probably 5% or so of all UAP sightings that do eventually get identified. So what about the final 5%? And here's what I hear most of the time. Well, if you think about the 200 billion stars in our galaxy, surely there must be some life out there. Well, that's true, but that's different from whether or not they have the ability to travel thousands of light years to visit us.
It seems astonishing that Buzz Aldrin observed a, quote, fairly bright light source while aboard the Apollo 11, a mysterious object making multiple 90-degree turns at a speedy clip, a blaringly bright object doing corkscrew twists over the skies in Kazakhstan. It seems hard to imagine that they were able to keep that from us all these years.
You know, I think, again, that was a matter of, well, we need some time to analyze and try and because, again, of the explosion of conspiracy theories that people want to go and run with. And so you need some time in order to investigate. And I'm sure that there were both of those reasons at play.
Well, one way to try to do away with the speculation and the conspiracy theories is to be as open as you can be. And I guess now it appears President Trump says the release all the files on what he called UFOs and what we now call UAPs, unidentified anomalous phenomena. But the government has continued with their line, saying that, you know, with all the speculation out there, that the U.S. government has recovered no alien technology or confirmed evidence of any alien life. And I guess that's what they've said, and they're sticking with that.
You know, and here's the other thing to keep in mind. We live in an age where there is so much rampant distrust of government that it causes imaginations to just go wild. The attitude that, oh, the government is always hiding something from us. Oh, we can't trust the government. Oh, Area 51 had alien spacecraft. There's just so many examples of these crazy conspiracy theories. And here's the thing. It's not just the government. There are thousands of independent experts that have also had an opportunity to examine the evidence. And the bottom line is there is not enough evidence to come to any of those conclusions. Seeing in this case is not believing. You need dozens of more pieces of evidence than just a picture of a wildly flying around dot.
Well, then, Mike, we're done here, and we appreciate your expertise. Your final say on whether there are other life beings out there that are flying around.
You have to look at the probability and do the experiment. And so if you look at probability of 200 billion stars in our galaxy and the possibility of there being life, maybe even intelligent life, I think it's very possible. Now, whether or not those beings have the ability or even interest in visiting and making contact, that's the question still left to be answered.
Mike Murray, astronomer and manager of the beautiful Delta College Planetarium, thanks for sharing your expertise. I'm sure we'll call upon you again soon.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, that's our pleasure, Mike. Thank you as we continue In Focus on WJR. Thank you, Art and Mary Ashley, for inviting me tonight to celebrate Candace Miller's birthday. I've been there for a number of years, thanks to Art and Mary. We appreciate that. We've got JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani coming up, waiting for him to come in. He may or may not make the cut here for the conversation. Other things that are going on in the news, we never had a chance to talk about the local officials aiming to oust the Arizona sheriff leading the Nancy Guthrie investigation. You know, I almost feel sorry for the guy. The guy probably was near retirement, took a job.
Right.
That he thought, oh, boy, that's a wealthy area. I won't have anything to worry about. And look what blew up in his face.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know anything about him other than he looked, as we said from the beginning, fairly incompetent with this kind of a case.
Right. And then, you know, the FBI, Kash Patel, saying that he kind of stiff-armed them.
Which is totally unacceptable.
Yeah, but you're right. That was my first thought, because obviously this is most likely an affluent area. And he probably was just coasting to retirement. And when this happened, he was completely flat-footed and out of his depth.
Totally out of his depth. And that's why That part I can understand. I will not accept if he's strong-armed or stiff-armed or
right.
whatever, however you want to say it,
well,
with the help from the FBI, who as soon as the FBI got involved, all of a sudden we had that video and stuff that guy never even could dream of providing.
And you wonder about being in the Guthrie family and kind of watching this all go on, and it seemed like there was some infighting between the officials. You know, just how frustrating. Frustrating is not even the word. That you were, your missing relative was kind of in the middle of all of this, where if this happened somewhere else where there was more experience, where there was maybe less egos involved, if this investigation would have been better conducted from the jump. And maybe this isn't going into, what, its fourth month here?
Yeah, it's crazy. I've never seen anything quite like it. Nobody has. We hope that there's some closure to this thing.
Yeah, and because
eventually, but
right,
none of it makes sense.
Right, because now the verbiage is almost like they know that she probably hasn't survived this long. So instead of asking for her to be brought home, they just want answers and they want closure, which leads me to believe that they believe she's no longer with us.
Tony Michaels, the Wizard of Oz and Ooze with the fireworks, has the parade company announcement about the Ford fireworks, which will kick off the summer in Detroit on Monday, June 22nd. The parade company, Ford Motor Company partnership, brings Detroit one of America's most stunning fireworks shows. And the theme that Tony has announced, Detroit, go for launch. So it's going to be a stunning show over the Detroit River, as it always is. The fireworks go off at about 10. We will be there broadcasting from 7 o'clock right up until the fireworks. For years, we would broadcast the fireworks over the radio. Now think about that just for a second. Yet we pulled it off. But this time our broadcast will end at 10 o'clock, and if you can be there, great. But if you can't be, you'll tune in to Channel 4 and actually watch the fireworks.
So did we used to broadcast and it's been a while, we used to broadcast the music, right, so that people at the actual fireworks could turn the music on and kind of have Tony Michaels' soundtrack to go along
with
it.
Yeah, we broadcast the whole thing.
Yeah.
And for those people listening in, they just heard the music and they heard the booms and the...
Right. It wasn't you saying, there's a red one, there's a blue one, there's a purple one.
No, thank goodness. I've done that in my past,
oh,
but
really?
Not here and not with that. Oh, look at that, a chrysanthemum. I didn't even know what that is. So,
That one didn't explode correctly, just kind of fizzled out.
Well, look, one just landed at our feet. that's not going to happen ever. Thank you. Michigan? What's that?
We do have a date for the Lions when they're playing overseas in Germany this year.
Are we going to go and broadcast from there? used to do stuff like
really?
That. I'd love to do that if someone will sponsor us.
Yeah, send us to or donate to the GoFundMe that we're going to launch. send Paul to Germany.
What is the date for the Lions?
It's going to be November 15th, and it's going to be at 9:30. We don't know the opponent yet, but I used to hate the idea of the Lions playing overseas, but when Team USA played that gold medal game at 9 a.m. on a Sunday, that was actually a lot of fun. So I'm actually looking forward
to it. So the Lions in Germany would be 9:30 a.m.?
Our time, yes.
Our time.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's later in the afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
6 hours, I think. I don't know with the time change and the, daylight savings and the standard and all the other stuff that we shouldn't have. So that's good. November 15th. Unlikely we'll be broadcasting from there, but you never know. Never say never.
Right. We're putting it out there into the universe.
Grand Traverse Pie Company unveiling the Pure Michigan Fresh Coast Pie. It's a collaboration that highlights Michigan tourism, agriculture, with the limited edition Pure Michigan Fresh Coast Pie. I don't know what is. Let's see what's in it. Made with Michigan-grown Montmorency tart cherries, my favorite, from Sailor Orchards in Traverse City. Northern Spy apples from Amos Orchards in Williamsburg. Ruble blueberries from True Blue Farms in Grand Junction. This pie brings together bright cherry tartness, classic apple depth, and rich blueberry flavor in one signature crumb pie. Oh, I like crummy pies.
Yeah, I love the crumb. I love the crumb topping more so than the actual.
Yeah. Created in celebration of Pure Michigan's 20th anniversary, it captures the flavor of Michigan in every slice. Thank you, Susan Wilcox Olson, Charlie Olson, her son, Mike Busley, the founder of Grand Traverse Pie Company, and Nick Nerbon, the media and digital director, Travel Michigan, for sending that along to us. One other last thing. Maybe we'll get to broadcast from Mark Sneffkamp Sr.'s anniversary for Bill Sneffkamp. Can you believe this? Metro Detroit's legendary automotive group selling Chrysler products for over 100 years.
Wow.
That family has been probably, I'm going to say, the longest running dealership of Chrysler products in the country. That's what I'm going to say. Ed Sneffkamp started selling used cars in 1919 in our city. In 1926, as a Chrysler Corporation formed, Ed Sneffkamp Sr. became the first Chrysler dealer in Detroit.
He had to sell the B70. They're the very first Chrysler.
What's that?
He must have sold the Chrysler 6 B70, which was the first ever, you know, was their Model T equivalent.
Okay. There have been four generations of Sneffkamps running family dealerships in Michigan. So we congratulate them, give them a fabulous 100th anniversary. Maybe, Mark, have us broadcast from your store and celebrate that 100th anniversary. We'd love to do that. It's Mark Sr. and Mark Jr. running the family business now, the Sneffkamp family of automotive family. All right, anything else? We don't have Ryan available to us yet.
Actually, he's here at the buzzer.
Oh, he is. Ryan, we haven't been able to talk to you the whole time we were on the road.
Paul, I've missed you.
Well, I've missed you too.
I've missed you, and I'm coming in hot today. I was with a couple of good friends of ours, and here we are. We're ready to go. I can't wait to talk to you about this, though. Paul, 3 hours much different than two, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. JR Afternoon, Ryan Ermani, as we continue. Regards, Paul W. Smith.